go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Titanic Tuesday on the horn. The 21st day of May, 2013. Good afternoon, good evening, good day, good night, good morning. Wherever you are on this little blue-green time machine hurtling through the universe. Our home, of course, is headonradionetwork.com. That's where the Listen Live button is. That's where the PayPal button is. That's how we keep all of this going. Try to raise about $150 per night, which we are going for again this evening, to keep the whole thing running. The horn is available, of course, not just at the website. Oh, no, 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 no. We're mobile now, folks. You can take the horn with you wherever you go via your smartphone device on Android or iPhone, you know, billions-dodging Apple iPhone. You can take it with you via the TuneIn Radio app or the Stitcher Radio app. There's a number of them out there, but we're particularly fond of those two, probably most fond of TuneIn Radio. There you go. Just about any way you want to listen, anywhere you want to listen, it can happen for you. Podcast address is, of course, at whiterosesociety.org under the subdomain for this program. And you can also get the iTunes at billions in tax dodging Apple's iTunes. Yeah. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It is the Titanic. See, I was about to run us forward. It's not Thorn Inside Thursday. It's Titanic Tuesday. You might recall that Titanic Tuesday is named for the giants of right-wing intellect, some of which was on display one day when our buddy Jim was listening to the radio over in Beckley, when the local Yahoo informed, I just love telling this story, informed one of his knuckle-breathing, mouth-walking listeners that there are fossilized sea life forms in the rock strata of West Virginia because of the inexorable movement of the Titanic plates. You know, they had a little gold band around them and a little crest of the Cunard line. You can see it right in the fossilized seashell. Hey, this just in from our buddy Isaac. Wolf Blitzer, isn't it time to retire, Wolf? Really? You and your lack of a chin? You're rich enough now, you can go and get a chin. You won't have to have that scruffy-ass pathetic beard anymore. Oh, well, never mind. Wolf Blitzer, over on Chicken Noodle News, says Isaac, just interviewed a victim of the tornado in Oklahoma, along with her infant child. At the end of the interview, Wolf, ever the religious man, asked the woman if she thanked the Lord, for having survived. And she replied, "I'm actually an atheist." Isaac says, "I love that answer. I do too." Because implicit in this idea of, thank Jesus I'm still here, is, but I'm okay with Jesus if he wants to wipe out a family of four that tried to take refuge in a freezer. Don't know why that's so hard to get, but it is. It is Titanic Tuesday, and we, of course, have to deal with a Titanic horse's rear end. Two of them, in fact, Tom Coburn and Jim Inhofe of Oklahoma. Coburn already announcing that, by God, if there's going to be any tornado storm disaster relief for his constituents, maimed and rendered homeless in Oklahoma, that it will come only if we can impose some misery on some other Americans. That's what he means when he says that there'll have to be other cuts. Inhofe later backed off a little bit and said, "Well, the reason we voted, and the whole Oklahoma congressional delegation, except for maybe one communist, the reason we voted against that Sandy relief bill is because it's full of pork. I mean, they's doing stuff with it, like building roads and bridges and whatnot. You know, even if there's not a shred of truth in that." That's why we vote. But see, we ain't going to be doing none of that out here in Oklahoma, Stan. So we'll be voting it. Jeebus, it's me, Bob. We used to talk a lot. Could you please send a sign? And could that sign please be to... let the world see Tom Coburn and Jim Inhofe be swept up in right in the heart and soul of a big old tornado, preferably while riding a bicycle. Because if you do that, Jeebus, I'm going to beat a hot path to the nearest church. I'll be speaking in tongues and swigging the strychnine and rolling on the floor and hollering and shouting and praising and, ooh, Lordy, I will. I will. But you're not going to do that, are you, Jeebus? Because you're not real. I mean, you may have been real. That or you're too busy trying to work out Tim Tebow's throwing motion or something. No, I got a feeling, as usual, we're going to be busy this evening. Most of us who have experienced a tornado understand that they are a function of, well, combined weather patterns. Hot air strikes cold air. They're circulating just the right way. They get going in that same counterclockwise motion that the water has when it goes a-swirling down your toilet or down your bathtub drain. I remember being a little boy and watching the water, you know, I stayed in the tub while the water was going out because I wanted to see the tornado form over the drain hole. Same principle. And, well, we understand. On the other hand, you've got, Pat Robertson. Pat Robertson, no, this is not prayer meeting Wednesday, but, in stories like this, you can't help but go to the folks who feel most comfortable opining on why these things happen. I don't know why it's so damn difficult to just say, hey, look, meteorology, I'll be dogged. But it is. And consequently, well... Marion, Patois, Pat Robertson, explaining the trouble with tornadoes. Remember, he's a spokesman for Jeebus.
This is Don from Illinois who wants to know, why did God send the tornadoes?
God didn't send tornadoes. God.
Well, there's a moment of honesty. He didn't send them. Come on, Pat, because he's not real. No, you're not going to do that, are you, Pat? No, Pat is a concerned and compassionate follower of the Prince of Peace. Right?
This is Don from Illinois who wants to know, why did God send the tornadoes?
God didn't send tornadoes. God set up a world in which certain currents... interfere and interact with other currents. When you have a warm group of air coming out of the south, coming up against a cold mass that's up in the north, mm-hmm. you'll get vortexes, and that in turn will spawn tornadoes. God doesn't send tornadoes to hurt people. He doesn't.
But he does send Muslims to fly into buildings because of People for the American Way and lesbians. I can't keep up. He does do some things, but he doesn't do certain.
Sin, you know, we call them acts of God, but they're not. So all I can say is that.
Come on, Jeebus, just one, just lightning bolt, just zip, right up the keister, zip, greasy spot, Pat Robertson, zip. Come on. Not there, are you? Yeah, okay. Tim Tebow's throwing motion is that big of a problem? Well, yeah, I really suppose it is, isn't it?
Why do you build houses in a place where tornadoes are apt to happen?
What? He didn't just do what I think he did he? Because if he did, we're going to have to talk. Now, I'm going to try to be quiet this time.
God doesn't send tornadoes to hurt people. He doesn't send, you know, we call them acts of God, but they're not. So all I can say is that why do you build houses in a place where tornadoes are apt to happen?
Blame the victim much, Marion? Well, Marion, we can talk about why people build houses where tornadoes are apt to happen. But that's going to involve a very, very long conversation about the settlement of the South and middle part of the country and the Southwest. And it's going to, oh, good God, we're going to have to. Okay, so there was this guy named DeSoto. Columbus. Oh, dear. You know, we talked a little bit last night toward the end of the program. I think it was Jim and me talking about it, maybe Jeremy as well. Talked a little bit about that Indian mound that they're going to bull, that they're in the process of bulldozing down in Calhoun County, Alabama. That's the county seat down there is Anniston. And you might recall the mayor said that after that engine mound's gone, well, what we're going to build's going to be a lot more prettier. Mayor's named Leon. Right, Leon. But see, people build houses where tornadoes are because they have to. Because they've been driven there by outside forces that are concerned not so much with whether or not children get blown away in tornadoes as they are with whether or not they can make a godforsaken dollar. And so people follow the money. You know, show me the money. Or they go to places like Kansas because they think that they can raise crops and subsist. That subsistence farming. That's how Kansas and the plains and the fertile were originally settled by people who were going to carve out a chunk of the so-called wilderness, which is BS in the first place because it was already settled and it wasn't wild. It was a maintained ecosystem. It was just maintained in such a way that the not very freaking smart white people couldn't see it. I don't want to get started like this. Why do you build houses where there are tornadoes? Why do people build houses in the shadow of volcanoes? Because the soil is really rich. I mean, you can put a rock in it and it'll grow another rock. It's that rich. You can feed entire civilizations off of volcanic soils. But the downside of that is volcanoes, earthquakes, At least so far, he hasn't blamed gay people for the tornadoes. I guess, is that progress? Why do people live where tornadoes form? Well, see, there's that part. There's the go where the money is part. But where the where tornadoes form part is also shifting. It's also expanding. The storms are getting worse and bigger and broader. Yeah, I'm sure Pat won't get to that.
Yeah. Well, and this year, of course, the weather patterns, the warm winter and the warm, you know, early part of the year that we're having seems to affect all of that. But I think the bigger question for people spiritually is always not so much why did God send them, but why didn't he intervene? You know, don't you think people always ask that question when they're...
Oh, okay, so God didn't make the tornado, but then God sat on his butt. Oh, I know what the bumper for this is. Haven't played this in a while. God sat on his butt and let little children get killed. We should be surprised. There's an Old Testament story where some little children laugh at some ignorant prophet's bald spot, and God sends a bear or a lion or a giant ground sloth or something to eat them. Some god, that god. He'll do the whole lightning bolt thing to a little kid who's tickled by, hey, mommy, look at the guy with the no hair. But he won't take out a Pat Robertson or a Jim Inhofe for a Tom Coburn. Some god. But then again, and let me see if I saved this, because it was worth the saving. Dadgummit, I thought I did. Isn't there a verse in their holy book about those who sow the wind shall reap the whirlwind? Doesn't that kind of apply to the Inhofes and the Coburns? But of course, they didn't do the reaping. The people who put them in office did the reaping. And people who stayed home from the polls did the reaping. And people who didn't vote for them did the reaping. But I want to hear this. This ought to be good. So why did God sit around with his thumb up his holy butt letting children die?
I mean, if enough people were praying, he would interview and go, you could pray.
Oh, it's their fault again! If enough people were praying, God would have intervened. He's got some little prayer-o-meter up there, and it goes from, like, blue to... And if it's not up in the orange going on red, you know, just like some sort of VU meter... Well, he ain't paying attention. Got the holy fingers in the holy ears. Go la 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 la. Not listening, not listening, not listening. Not nearly having it. Nope. Gonna kill the babies. La 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 la. And we wonder why I think Christianity is an ethically dead, morally bankrupt institution.
Always ask that question
when
there's tragedy.
If enough people were praying, he would interview and go, you could pray. God, Jesus stilled the storm. You could still storms. But
Jesus never had to contend with a 2-mile-wide tornado doing 200 miles an hour over the gardens of Gethsemane or the plains of batshit Abednego or whatever.
You know, the hurricane, for example, is a release mechanism that God set in to take the heat out of this world and to transfer heat around various parts of the globe.
Stop it. It's a release mechanism that God put in place.
tequila. No straw. Newman.
It's very necessary. The fact that
hurricanes are necessary.
People decide they want to build houses on the edge of an ocean.
For those unaware, Pat Robertson broadcasts from Virginia Beach, Virginia. Trust me, that ain't in the Shenandoah Valley. So people don't just build houses on the edges of oceans where hurricanes go. People build multi-hundred million dollar right-wing phony baloney Jesus broadcast empires there too.
Their fault is not God's, you know. As this...
So, okay. So if a great big hurricane comes along and just whacks the daylight out of the studios there in Virginia Beach or wherever the hell it is, then that won't be God's fault. That will be Pat Robertson's fault for building his daggum dumbass TV operation by the ocean. You know, where hurricanes pop up from time to time. But I'm sure he's divinely protected because, well, God doesn't send them. He does, you know, Pat's there praying every day, you know. Dear Jeebus, please don't let the hurricane come and wipe me out and make me look like the fool that I am.
Same thing with if you're going to build a house in the San Andreas Fault, you know there's going to be...
Or a nuclear power plant. San Onofrio.
A fault, you know the earth is faulted, and they're going to be earthquakes. So yeah. don't blame God for doing something foolish.
Don't blame God for doing something foolish. Can we parse a little English here? Who did the foolish thing, God or... Don't blame God for doing something foolish. Just too good. I mean, God could. I mean, if only they prayed more. What a rotten thing to say to people who are grieving and scared and exhausted and tormented and tired. Oh, God could have saved you, but you didn't pray enough. So, there's the modern religious interpretation of tornadoes. But this is far better. Oh, this is way better. Way, way better. You know where I'm going, don't you?
Of course you do!
Yeah, Alex Jones. Unbearable paranoia, really. You know, we want the lightning bolt. We want... That's the Thorazine dart heading straight for Alex Jones's neck. All right, here we go. Why did the hurricanes happen?
Oma, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hello, Alex. I'm a grandmother of four beautiful little granddaughters.
Congratulations.
And I've been following you since you were a young man when you started exposing us losing our national parks. And I just want to tell you, I'm really, really concerned that people are not keeping up an understanding about the technology that's over us to do with ARP and Skylar. And I firmly believe that this is orchestrated and purposeful, man-made, and we live...
Orchestrated? Strings, bassoons, timpani, cymbals, xylophones, it's orchestrated.
Right here on this Sumatran fault, I'd like for you to talk about some of this sometimes. It's about the sinkhole, how that's enlarging, and that this will be a man-made thing when they do this New Madrid Fault. And so these are...
I think she's talking about the New Madrid Fault, which kind of runs up along the Mississippi River course. And sinkholes. That's a conspiracy, too. Well, it was, really. It's what happens when you take a very, very fragile ecosystem that's damn near below sea level, and you pump the hell out of it, and there's nothing left to hold up the surface. But, you know, Kenyan Muslims, right? Right. Come on, crazy lady. Come back. Aw, please.
To do with the technology that's in control over us.
Well, ma'am, I had an Air Force whistleblower on yesterday, and I showed TV viewers, for radio listeners, I gave out headlines. Type in Bill Gates weather modification, geoengineering, London Guardian, AP, Reuters. They spend, Department of Energy, last time I checked, $5 billion a year in studying weather modification. See, under U.S. Code Title 50, Chapter 32, Subsection 1528, Paragraph B, it allows chemical, biological, radiological, or any other testing, even lethal, on citizens unsuspecting. The government claims it's...
And, you know, that's exactly how it reads, on citizens unsuspecting. It go there. It's exactly what it says. I mean,
he wouldn't make anything up now, would he?
See, that's how this works. You give people just a little itsy teensy weensy bit of fact, and then you embellish on it like putting icing on a cake till there's more icing than there is cake. It is true that the 1% are pumping money into researching the modification of global climate. And that's because of the mess that we're in. And what they're hoping is, like we talked about last night, that they can go on just, you know, pumping filth into the planet, and that someday some genius is going to be sitting in a swimming pool somewhere and yell, Eureka! And go running naked through town because he's figured out how to stop global climate change. That's what that is. Oh, never mind.
Allowed to kill us. Now, in the main title it says it's illegal, but then in the subtitle it says unless for law enforcement or research purposes. And I mean, I've gotten the heads of major weather modification companies on that do it for ski resorts and insurance companies, because see, ski resorts will go out, and I'm going to hold you over, man, because this is important. I'm going to put you on hold and come back and talk to you more, but I want to get this out.
Absolutely.
Ski resorts. This is on record, by the way. Just the public doesn't know about it.
There's a ski resort conspiracy.
What a fool. Honest to Marge.
It's like if you never saw the Atlantic Ocean, you wouldn't know it's there. Ski resorts go
what?
Get insurance, and if they don't get snow, they get enough money to survive. Well, the insurance companies aren't going to pay out on that. So they go. There's more than 100 of these companies I know of. Some of them have got like 30, 40, 50 aircraft. And they hire them. Canada does it too. Europe does it. Switzerland does it. And they fly in and create clouds in the right weather to make it snow. So they don't pay out on the insurance. And sometimes ski resorts do it themselves. So that's what's going on. And that's just commercial. Of course, there's weather weapon stuff going on. We have,
of course, even though he's provided no actual evidence of it, except for the stuff that he's told by the CIA through his magic flashlight. I always wondered whatever happened to that guy. He went out and got a radio gig. I'll be damned. Well, you got to at least respect Alex's really stirring, scary bumper music, don't you?
floods in Texas like 15 years ago, killed 30-something people in one night. Turned out it was the Air Force. Let's go ahead and talk to Caroline. Caroline, thanks for holding. You were making your point about weather weapons.
See how I just did that going into the break?
Yeah, there were floods in Texas that 15 years ago killed 30-something people in one night. Turned out it was the Air Force. We'll be back.
I laugh. But how many people are sitting out there?
Emery, come in here. That nice Jones boy is talking about how the Air Force is sending the tornadoes to... what I don't understand, why aren't they sending the tornadoes to take out the Sharia law?
I could cry. I really
could. Yes, they are doing everything they can from the scientists we've talked to and the weather programs and weather men and women, meteorologists we've had on. And most of what they said 10 years ago, 15 years ago, has now been confirmed.
You know where we're going, right? I know you know where we're going. The Boston bombing was a black flag government operation, right? And it's kind of hard to fake a tornado. Everybody saw the tornado. But that's not going to slow down.
Alex Jones. Seeker of truth.
No. Yeah, you know where we're going. The government sent the tornadoes to take people's guns, right? Well, not quite. Pretty damn close, though. Close. Oh, God. My country.
They're trying to ruin the U.S. croplands with the barium salt, lime dioxide, and attacking and trying to destroy us. Just like they're trying to ship our jobs to Europe and to China and shutting down everything. And we're under war.
And everything.
This is a globalist incremental attack. And we're under full-spectrum war attack. I mean, look, we're dying. Cancer rates are exploding. And so, yes, ma'am, that's exactly what's going on. And there are...
Now, wait just a damn minute. Cancer rates are exploding. Being as how I live in the Appalachian Sacrifice Zone, I actually know a little bit about this. There's nobody spraying chemtrails over Appalachia. They are, however, spraying... They, being not the government, but fine, upstanding corporate citizens, you know, persons, like Alpha Natural Resources, or Arch, or Patriot, or, they are spraying ultra fine. And see, the difference between me and Alex Jones is this is verifiable. In fact, you can go to ACAC.org and you can watch a video of the scientists talking about the science, and they're real scientists. They didn't get their PhDs by sending in a matchbook that says draw Spunky the Turtle, okay? And for instance, if you go and watch the video, you can see Dr. Michael McCauley talking about ultrafine particles and polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons and what nasty little cancer factories they are, you know, less than 1/100th the diameter of a human hair, as tiny as a virus. Yeah. That's real. They are killing us. Cancer is exploding in certain parts of this country. But here's the thing that would drive Alex Jones crazy. It's being done not for some nefarious one world order globalization, you know, ate too many paint chips as a child conspiracy theory. It is both simpler and more complex than that. It's being done for profit. Because when coal companies get to poison innocent citizens, they get to make money. And money is more important than some human being getting to live to a ripe old age and going from child, or son or daughter, to father or mother, to grandmother or grandfather, and perpetuating heritage and culture. See how it works? That's how it works. I hate this guy. I despise this guy.
Natural tornadoes. I think the tornadoes going down, and from the meteorologists I've talked to, show that the atmosphere is thinner. It's thick atmosphere, hot and cold coming together, to leave it simple, that causes these tornadoes.
And you are simple.
And, you know, tornadoes are way down. Of course, they lie and say they're way up to try to get carbon taxes. But I don't know if this was a weather weapon or not, but they can, with the right weather conditions, they can create and steer groups of tornadoes. The question is, were helicopters, because they use those up close, and small fixed-wing aircraft...
Helicopters? Are they black?
Alex?
Let's go back.
Of course, they lie and say they're way up to try to get carbon taxes. But I don't know if this was a weather weapon or not, but they can, with the right weather conditions, they can create and steer groups of tornadoes. The question is, were helicopters, because they...
Hold on, we're going to lose it!
Steering. Now, is that rack and pinion tornado steering?
Alex!
Use those up close, and small fixed-wing aircraft seen in and around the weather patterns. Like, did people 50 miles out as these storm systems, did they see aircraft in and around the clouds spraying and doing things? If you saw that, you better bet your bottom dollar they did this. But who knows if they did? You know, that's the thing. We don't know. Anything else, Caroline?
Nah, no, really, nothing else, Caroline. That'll be enough. We're ready to take Mr.
Jones
back to his little room and give him his purple crayon to put between his toes and write on the walls some more. This is my Alex Jones theme song. We just kind of have to play it. Because I love it. It just sounds like Alex, doesn't it?
Jones, put a wiggle in your stride. Too and real estate is a
big day for Mr. Jones. He is not so square. Mr. Jones will stick around. Everybody's grand.
Everybody dance. Talking Heads, of course, Mr. Jones. Alex Jones out there listening to the Tralfamadorians living in his thyroid. Lottie, why do you feel like dancing with a bowl of fruit on your head? Because it's Mr. Jones! The government can create and steer groups of tornadoes. Good God, this government can't keep old people fed or children in Head Start. And we're really going to ascribe to it the power to create and steer tornadoes? Oh, F me to pieces. Just, please. It's unbearable. And then, of course, Sandra with a quick tweet, asking, blah blah blah, full spectrum, blah blah, chemtrails, weather weapons. What the f*** is Alex Jones going on about? The world as he understands it, Sandra. The world as he understands it. As it is explained to him almost minute by minute, again, by the Tralfamadorians who live in his thyroid. Or the people from Alpha Centauri who live in his colon. Or Isaac pointing out, by the way, and apparently he was not the only one who saw this, Wolf Blitzer has awkward moment after Oklahoma tornado survivor after asking if she thanked the Lord. Oh my God, they made poor Wolfie leave the Situation Room. We all know he's not comfortable when he has to do that. They made him go out and interact with people, and not the usual persona bots that he back in the studio. Okay, so tell us about it, Wolfie. We've actually got the audio now. this ought to be precious. And we take you now to Wolf Blitzer, live on the scene in Moore, Oklahoma.
Anders is
Brian.
Brian. Yeah, Brian. You like Brian, huh? That's your dad. Well, we're happy you're here. You guys did a great job.
Yeah.
And I guess you got to thank the Lord, right?
Yeah.
Do you thank the Lord for that split second decision?
I'm actually an atheist.
Oh, you are. All right. Don't thank the Lord. You made the right call.
Yeah. We are here, and for
Wait. What was that? Oh, you are. Oh, you made the right call. Actually, ma'am, you did. Only I think he was talking about something relating to the tornado.
I don't blame anybody for thanking the Lord.
Of course not. So. Hey, all right.
I don't blame anybody. Okay, that's fine. That's gracious. Most atheists are. Far more so than most religious people. Memo to the assignments desk at CNN. Don't send Wolf out of the Situation Room. You put in all the nice soothing colors in there for a reason, and you gave him lots of toys to play with. Don't ask him to go out and interact with the humans. It's not going to come. Of course, you thank the Lord. Absolutely. You know, as soon as we fed, went up and offered up a burnt sacrifice and threw a virgin into a volcano, and we thanked the Lord. We thanked the Lord, Wolf. It's too much. It's too much. We can't, as noted last night, we talked about anthropomorphic tornadoes that target communities. And frankly, as between the two, I would at least be accepting of an old fraud like Patois Robertson saying, you did thank the Lord, didn't you? But Wolf Blitzer is no more a religious human being probably than I am. But he's got to sound human. And so he knows he's in Oklahoma, Stan, and just you make certain assumptions. Obviously, he's never read BartCop.com, or else he'd know that there's at least one non-believer in the state. But poor Wolf. Poor Wolf. He rolled a 27-sided Dungeons & Dragons die, 26 of which would have resulted in, yes, Wolf, I did. I thank the Lord that I survived and all them other people died. That's my God. Yeah, my God's like that. 26, but no. One of those comes up, actually, Wolf, I'm an atheist. And that's the number Wolf rolled. Stay away from the casinos, Wolf. Honest to God, if you've got 20, the house will have 21. If you've got four aces, the house will have a royal flush. Just don't do it, Wolf. Don't do it. So the insurance industry is saying that there's something on the order of in excess of $1 billion of damage been done. And they already know that from inside of 24 hours. That means that entire phalanges of insurance company accountants have been busy counting up what the losses are, and on the other, in the other building, the phalanges of insurance company lawyers are quickly translating "we don't pay" into Oklahoma Stanny. The fact is, we're going to be on the hook for this, because people in Oklahoma are, in fact, Americans. Citizens of the United States, just like you and me. And at least according to the preamble to the Constitution, we are trying to make a more perfect union. And part of that endeavor involves reaching out to our fellow Americans. When they are suffering. And it involves not simply walking away when a place is in ruins. It's not in our nature to simply walk away. And by our nature, I mean human nature. We come back and we come back and we come back and we come back until the place will simply not support life anymore. There are lots of examples of that through history. Mohenjo-Daro, the ruins of the Anasazi people. Rapa Nui, Angkor Wat. Tikal, Copan, El Mirador, Teotihuacan, where there's now a Walmart. We don't like walking away from the works of our hands and days. And no country, no society that considers itself anything remotely enlightened does so. So we rebuild. There are places where rebuilding is kind of silly, on floodplains, along coastlines, building things on top of barrier islands that are that develop as a sort of geoevolutionary response to the battering of giant storms. It's a beautiful place. But if there's no evidence of people building long-term structures there before, maybe that's because they're not sustainable. Maybe the peoples who lived successfully on the broad and open spaces of Oklahoma, North Texas, Kansas, etc., lived the way they lived not because they lacked for better technology, but because the way that they lived was most conducive to the place that they lived. You ever seen an actual, no kidding, wigwam? It's kind of dome-shaped. There's a reason for that. Oh, well. But I'm really, really proud of Sheldon Whitehouse, Rhode Island Senator. I saw a thread on Texas Betsy's Facebook page last night where she said, just asked questions about what was going to be the upshot of this. Who did the saving? Who did the rescue work? You know, those government workers that teabaggers hate so much. And I suspect she had barely hit enter on the comment before somebody said, "It's too soon! We gotta deal with it. We can't talk about politics. You're politicizing." Oh, please. Disasters are political, whether you want to talk about it or not. Disasters are political because the only thing that will pull a community out of it is political in nature. Because polis means community, city, ingathering of people with a common purpose. And so, bless his heart, Sheldon Whitehouse put good use to some time he had on the floor of the Senate. Good stuff. Here we go.
So, you may have a question for me. Why do you care? Why do you, Sheldon Whitehouse, Democrat of Rhode Island, care if we Republicans run off the climate cliff like a bunch of proverbial lemmings and disgrace ourselves? I'll tell you why. We're stuck in this together. We are stuck in this together. When cyclones tear up Oklahoma, and hurricanes swamp Alabama, and wildfires scorch Texas, you come to us, the rest of the country, for billions of dollars to recover. And the damage that your polluters and deniers are doing doesn't just hit Oklahoma and Alabama and Texas. It hits Rhode Island with floods and storms. It hits Oregon with acidified seas. It hits Montana with dying forests. So like it or not, we're in this together. You drag America with you to your fate. So I...
Stop that for a minute. Has this issue been more plainly and more clearly delineated than that? If it has, I haven't heard it. You drag America with you to your fate. That line, I don't know. There's something. Is it prophetic? It's certainly profound. You drag America with you to your fate. Fates, those members of the ancient Greek pantheon who sat playing out the threads of our little lives and weaving some together and keeping some apart. You drag America with you to your fate. That is a freighted statement. I'd love to engage in a little conversation about that idea. How is it that relatively small states like Alabama and Oklahoma or Mississippi, and yes, a big state like Texas, but certainly not bigger than the rest of the country, how is it that a minority comprised of ignorant people are dragging the rest of us to their fate? We can't leave Oklahoma to merely suffer. We cannot turn away. You know, I've as is usual in the case of one of these disasters, and maybe this is going to mark me out as an ass. But as usual, there are the pleas for help to the Red Effin' Cross. Not a big Red Cross fan. I believe in government. I believe that this, and I, you know, I use the word believe advisedly. But I believe in government. I believe in government of the people, by the people, and for the people. I believe that the purpose of government is indeed to form a more perfect union, ensure domestic tranquility. You know, in Moore, Oklahoma right now, there's not just a whole heck of a lot of domestic tranquility. And it is for us, we, the people, seeking to form that more perfect union, to go in and ensure domestic tranquility. The lovely word, tranquility. It is the government's job, not some charity's. It's the government's job because it's our job and we are the government. For all I'm worth, I'm going to be, I insist on pushing back against this right-wing notion that the government is some overarching, overreaching thing that is running our lives. We are the government. And we have an obligation to Oklahoma. We have an obligation wherever disaster strikes. And we have an obligation to try to keep disasters from striking. And disasters don't just happen to always be weather-related. You know what? We pay attention to something like what happened in Oklahoma because it is on a grand scale. It is unignorable. But the fact of the matter is, it's a disaster when some grandmother doesn't get lunch, or when 1,000 grandparents don't get lunch because the same people that are dragging us to their fate are dragging Granny and Grandpa too. What is the answer? Except to step in and say, we're not going to let you. There is a fate to be had that is not this horrible, horrible fate that you are running at headlong. There is a better way. Let's finish up with Senator Whitehouse. Let's go back just a hair.
It hits Rhode Island with floods and storms. It hits Oregon with acidified seas. It hits Montana with dying forests. So like it or not, we're in this together. You drag America with you to your fate. So I want this future. I want a Republican Party that has returned to its senses and is strong and a worthy adversary. In a strong America that has done right by its people and the world. That's what I want. I don't want this future. I don't want a Republican Party disgraced that let its extremists run it off the cliff in an America suffering from grave economic and environmental and diplomatic damage because we failed, because we didn't wake up and do our duty to our people, and because we didn't lead the world. I do not want that future. But that's where we're headed. So I will keep reaching out and calling out, ever hopeful that you will wake up before it is too late, both for you and
for us. Ooh-wee, my goodness gracious glory. Right wing didn't like that a little bit. Look at him, making politics out of a tragedy. Stupid bastards. Don't even understand that the politics is one of trying to avert the tragedy. Darlene writing in says, failing empire, failing you, me, and yes, grandma. Or how about when an elderly woman doesn't get her medication from sheriffs and dies in court from an asthma attack, all because of an old traffic violation? That's a real story, too. The Dateline, remember, dragging us to their fate, is, of course, Montgomery, Alabama. A woman died on a courthouse floor because Alabama sheriff's deputies refused to give her medicine after arresting her for an old traffic ticket. Dwana Vonsha London Richardson died gasping for one more breath. She did not have to die. Summary execution over a traffic violation. Just another day in Jesus land. Yeah. Thanks, Darlene. Let's go to the phones. Sandra's with us on the Skype line. Hey, Sandra.
Hey, Bob. Yeah, 2 days in a row, I know, but
that's okay.
Quick one, too. Well, it's a quick one, but I just have to... Listen, is that... That Corbyn senator from Oklahoma, is he the only one with this offsetting business about disaster relief, or is that party wide now?
I think it's pretty much party wide because there were members of the House from Oklahoma who voted against the Sandy relief for similar reasons.
Okay, but the thing is. Is this just a case of just outrageous stupidity? Because how are you offsetting, you know, natural disasters? What happened to the general welfare aspect of the government and this country? Because this dude is going to be offsetting every damn day when the whole place is engulfed in the climate catastrophe. I mean, it doesn't really even make any sense. That's all.
Just remember, this guy offset the Iraq war with by giving tax cuts to rich people.
Yeah, I know, but it's just, yeah, exactly. I mean, so basically it's just idiocracy, because it's just ridiculous what he's suggesting, because there is no way of controlling, well, I mean, Alex Jones, notwithstanding, controlling these events, you know? So as soon as he rolled out with that yesterday, I just thought, oh, my God, you know, that movie just came to mind, that Idiocracy. And then it got even more stupid when you had people like Greg Sargent, who was supposed to be liberal, saying, well, it's okay if he comes, you know, I mean, as if there's political space for that garbage.
Well,
and I hate when our side does that.
Oh.
It's like, oh, come on. It's chronic, ain't it?
Oh, it is. And remember, I mean, I love the response of Jim Inhofe, who said, well, you know, I voted against the Sandy relief because it was full of pork, but that won't happen out here in Oklahoma.
Well, yeah, I mean, then they just, you know, they start drifting into the theater of the absurd. But there is something just really frightening with people giving space to that bullshit, because people are paying taxes in every possible way in this country, and you know, you don't get crap in this country, at least having some sort of predictor of horrible weather that might be coming your way, and some help when it all goes pear-shaped. should be part of the bargain of existing in this country at this point. So, you know, he really...
Well, that's part, Sandra, that's part of the bargain of any country that calls itself civilized, and
well,
and except us.
Right. No, but so, and you know, the idea that it's just hideous. And, you know, they'll be voting that pig back in. That's the thing.
Well, actually, I was told earlier today, Coburn's not running again.
Okay, well, then we get to, then their realness is just, he's just a horrible sociopath then.
Well, certainly he is, but I mean, do you harbor any even teeny tiny itsy bitsy hope that somebody sane is going to come along after him? Because I don't.
No, I don't know. No, I don't. I just found the whole discussion disgusting, and I thought, well, you know, don't sanction it by saying, oh, we're all entitled to this, that, or another. No, at some point you have to decide, well, yes, when there's a 3-mile-wide tornado that wipes out a community, we will help them. I mean, there isn't any but after that.
No.
you know, just point blank.
And there's no if after it either. We will help them if we get to keep on starving Granny.
Right. You know what I'm saying? So I just am kind of, you know, it's just appalling that the level of cruelty is just now, you know, baked in. I mean, we had a period maybe after the civil rights movement where the cruelty kind of abated for a second, but boy, it's right back. You know, it might as well be, you know, 1850 or something. You know what I mean? We're just really back to a really coarse and cruel America, which is kind of how it was founded. So we're not straying too far from how it all began, you know?
Yeah, and I can't... And exactly how it all began. In fact, I heard Dr. Bill say toward the end of his program today, he's going to spend tomorrow talking about that theory of the founding of the country that says basically it was founded by privileged racists who were out to take care of their own interests. I'm very much looking forward to that conversation because it's true.
No, I mean, it is, and the only thing is that, you know, we had documentation that could be amended and changed and, you know, made into broadening, but it certainly is being ignored now on so many levels in this country, so that's a bit disturbing. But the only other thing I wanted to mention was that Wolf Blitzer, I mean... Are you Wolf? So poor, so black, Blitzer.
So poor. Oh my God, I'd forgotten about that.
Again, another moment. So poor,
so
black. Listen,
you
know
what?
Stop it. No, that's my moment. That has to be in the top two of like what I watched on TV ever in history. Was when that said that, and so. Today, he gets this woman who's like, you know what? No, fool, I'm an atheist. That was, like, priceless. And what you said is true. What's the chances?
I mean, there's some people out there that have that kind of shithouse luck, you know, where they come out smelling like a rose. I mean,
right.
But not poor Wolf.
No, but it's not.
So poor, so Blitzer.
Yeah, it's like so poor, so black. Then there's, remember that he was talking about the dark-skinned person in Boston, about him being, is he American too? Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, nonstop with this dude. But for her, you know, bless her, for saying, you know, for being the one. I couldn't even believe she, you know, that took a lot of, yeah, I'm like, go, atheist. That took a bit for her to say,
I gotta ask you, have you seen, because it's unfair to do this on the radio, but have you seen the video?
No, I saw the video. She's holding her little one, right?
Yeah, and there's that really, really creepy moment when he's, like, reaching out, fondling the foot of the infant. Trying to be human.
I had a flashback of when he was dancing on one of those late-night shows. I don't know if you remember that.
Oh, God.
And he had some women dancing around him. He was holding a drink and kind of moving. You don't remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God. So, I mean, he's some sort of...
Come on, you hip cats. Let's go out and party.
Oh, he's just... He's hideous, but I don't know.
Who's the brilliant guy at the assignments desk who said, well, you know, Wolf hadn't been out for a while?
No, that made my day, seeing her just sort of say that, because, yeah... You know, because, I mean, you have to, you know, poor Blitzer, because he's in, you know, the Bible Belt and, you know, the whole nine yards. So, of course, he can come out with
yeah,
that.
He didn't realize that if he didn't have a camera crew around him, there's a whole bunch of people in that state that would, like, go and bury him in an earthen dam somewhere.
Oh, my God. So, you know, and I understand we're still dealing in a horrible tragedy, but you really have to embrace those sort of moments when they happen.
Right.
Oh, damn.
And see, that's the whole point, Sandra, is that, you know, there's this discussion of course FEMA will be out there. Of course FEMA will be acting through We the People, because that's how we are. But let's remember, there's going to be days on end of people without weeks, months of people without homes. But we're going to get on it right away.
Well,
of course, we weren't so good at that with Katrina, but...
No, but they had a heck of a job talking about it on CNN today.
Oh,
one of those
stop.
Channels.
No.
Yeah, it's just...
Brownie?
You know, It's just some bad Peter principle, you know, where you fall up. And it's just, you know what I mean? It's like, huh? You know, it really is the seed of absurd, except for there's so much death and destruction, you know? And I made the mistake of looking at the footage of that storm again. Listen, 40 minutes on the ground, it's so destructive. I can't even wrap my head around how destructive that is, or was, or continues to be.
It's mind-boggling.
You know, boggling, yeah. And they have all these alerts going on right now, too, I heard, tonight. But anyway.
Well, yeah, I was reading Bartkov's page, and he said, oh, by the way, the tornadoes are supposed to be back tonight. And
yeah, some crazy mess like that. But,
there's real questions, like, why aren't schools built with storm shelters?
Well, no, why, and as I was saying, why don't they have some sort of area where you could get to, you know, within 10 minutes of where you are, some little underground shelters you can run into? It don't have to be that big.
Did you see Charlie Pierce, who apparently went to the FAQ tornado page of Moore, of the city of Moore, Oklahoma? And one of the FAQs was, what if I live in a trailer?
And
the answer was basically, well, aren't you screwed?
Well, no. I mean, that's the other thing. I'm like, you know, there's no reason why you can't have, as part of the public services, some area where you can go into the basement somewhere. If you're going to have to live in a trailer park in Tornado Alley, you should at least have some, I mean, I don't know.
But I'm laughing
because otherwise I'd be crying, because it just seems so common sense.
But look at the beautiful beauty of the free market America.
Right.
Why are those things even sanctioned for use? And I'm not being a snob, okay? Because as compared to this 80-year-old cracker box I live in, I would be thrilled to be in a double wide, okay? Mm. I would be tickled. I would be stupid with glee, okay? But why? I mean, they cannot withstand 200. Well, there's not much that can withstand 200 mile an hour winds. But, you know, here in West Virginia, and in Appalachia, they make sense because, you know, we've got mountains around us that sort of protect us.
So you have natural barriers.
Yeah, except they don't anymore because the mountains aren't here.
They've been blown up, yes.
But it makes no sense to me. I mean, I'm sure the right-wing answer is, well, you know, people just got to be free to make their decisions.
Or the choices they made. I mean, no, I hear you, but it is absurd, though, when you think about, and it's going to get more absurd because, I don't know. I mean, these events aren't going to stop. I mean, and they're not saying that the climate change had anything to do with this storm. Is that the latest?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you have to say that.
No, but the amount of energy that's there for these storms to gather from is a direct result of the climate change.
Sure it is, because was it 30 years ago, 40 years ago that the climate scientists were saying, you know, the storms are going to get bigger and stronger and more intense, and this is what we... Because this is all extrapolated from data that's not new. I mean, tornadoes have been a part of my life for, you know, when I was growing up in Alabama. And I remember when a couple of towns, well, one of them that means a lot to me, were hit and just wiped out. And yes, they happen, but it's the frequency and the intensity that makes the difference. I mean, look how late into the season Sandy was.
Yeah, oh, no.
And that's without taking into account that Sandy was just a Cat 1 hurricane.
No, and then you have these storms now that are like, by the way, you know, they're covering 2 and 3 continents. You know, they're so big.
Right.
You know, just stunning sort of energy, you know, the energy levels of these weather events are just, you know, mind-blowing. But anyway, I have to ask you quickly, did you happen to see that article I tweeted you about that Detroit business?
Yeah, I did. In fact, I had seen it. I'd seen it before, and it's horrifying. I mean, this is what are they calling it? Petroleum coke?
No, but
from the tar sand. It's just tar sand sludge. Is what it
right,
is.
Right, but it's a product that those horrible Koch brother industries are actually selling to somebody.
Yeah.
I mean, these people...
And there's a mountain of it in Detroit.
Right, but they've basically... I mean, it's just... Anyway, I was just shocked by, you know, how brazen and just whatever now these oligarchs in this country are, you know?
Well, yeah, and it's unnecessary, for starters. But secondarily, yeah, why not? Let's put it next to a river in Detroit. What could possibly go wrong? And it's waste. It's poison.
No, but it's near water. It's near a waterway, though.
Yes.
It's just really freaky.
I mean, you can see it from the Windsor, Canada side.
No, but that's the funny thing. They're the one. Something must be done with that. They're the ones complaining about it. That's what I was.
And it
like,
came from Alberta.
The hubris, you know, the nerve. It's all just some sort of, I mean, listen, if you don't know the ins and outs of these stories, you know, you really don't know what's going on. Because if you don't know that shit is from Canada, you know, you can't see the irony in this MF-er talking about something must be done, you know?
Great voice.
Oh my God. And the only other thing that I thought was just over the top was, these media companies are like whining, but where were they when WikiLeaks was under attack? I'm sorry, I don't mean to go there, but I'm like, didn't you see this shit coming?
Well, that I file that under can swallow a mountain and gag on a gnat.
Okay, because it's just so
because
obvious.
It wasn't them, you know, and they're not so, you know, they're not so keen if some little blogger gets the iron fist. But let it be Judith Miller, and whoa, the flag has fallen.
Or Fox News at the moment. I mean, I'm not saying that what's going on. I mean, it's scary what's going on because, you know, I thought we had, you know, some sort of freedom of the press, but they also were quick to sort of to dismiss WikiLeaks. And it's exactly as you thought it would play out. If the government can do that to them, who's next?
Us.
So anyway,
you, me, I mean,
yeah,
right, and you know, President Obama says, well, you know, I fully support a rape shield, not rape, a reporter shield law, except when it was coming up for a vote a few years ago, they didn't. So, no, but you know, there's a larger truth behind this, and it has to do with the nature and structure of government. The framers set this thing up where they thought they were going to have three branches that would check and balance each other. But the fact of the matter is, I think it's almost like some sort of scientific law that when one branch is run by one person as compared to, say, the Congress, which is run by which is a lot of people, power will the one person who has power will naturally seek to expand that power, and it's there throughout human history. Whether it's John Adams trying to prosecute people under the Alien and Sedition Act, or Thomas Jefferson expanding the power of government to buy half a continent, or Abraham Lincoln levying troops without a declaration of war.
Well, I mean, Hamilton designated the executive as something to be energetic, but that was, with the consideration that the Congress wouldn't abdicate their power utterly and completely.
And,
because that's a bit dicey what he proposed anyway. It could work when you had the Congress doing their job, but since Nixon, I'm sure it was before, FDR, but Nixon, they've completely, really dropped the ball on what they should and can be doing. So,
well,
it's not surprising,
The War Powers Act, under Reagan,
which is the
use of force with
anyway.
Bush. But I remember saying when Dim Leader was still in office and all of the little wingnuts were rah-rah and things like getting rid of habeas corpus and doing away with the last shattered, tattered remnants of the Bill of Rights, I remember saying, listen, you guys are okay with it now, but do you think there's never going to be a Democratic president? How are you going to feel about it then? Because he's not going to get rid of, or she, is not going to get rid of these powers that you've given the presidency.
Mm-mm. No, not at all, as we see. But,
And I mean, they really hate it since that one's using them.
Well, he'll probably be back on his Skull the Negro tours this weekend, so it might give them a little bit of break.
Yeah, did you go read the Coates article?
Oh, yeah, that was excellent. There was some other pushback that I've read, too, behind it. But, can't argue with it. Anyway, hopefully we won't have to be subjected to that again for a while, because that's painful.
Well,
if I want to watch the Cosby Show, I can fucking go on Nick at Night or something. Shit.
There you go. See, that was Bill can't be happy having the president work in his corner.
Man. Anyway, okay, listen, have a good evening.
All right, you too, Sandra. See ya.
Bye.
Bye. Calling from California, that is, of course, the inimitable Sandra. I think we're going to take a break now. Phone lines are open, 304-658-3333. And, of course, the Skype line, Bob Kincaid Horn. Use it. It's easy. It's free. I think there is a broader question about how and why the for-profit media cover these horrors. I just try to find different words besides disasters. Because if you didn't know better, you would swear that we are disaster junkies. And this is a question that I can only put to our international listenership, whether it be Scott in Sweden or Robert in Australia or any of Jan in the UK or any of our other listeners from abroad. Do media there respond to natural disasters and huge events of human suffering the way that the for-profit media do here? Because I'm saying this hoping that I'm not being insensitive or assish, or that you understand that that's not where it's coming from. I'm tired of it. Because the entirety of the 24/7 cable news cycle now seems devoted to sitting around waiting for the other shoe to drop. Waiting to find out where Anderson Cooper is going to parachute into next. And I'm reminded of Bill Frist back when the tsunami hit Southeast Asia. They were somewhere that had been devastated, and he told the cameraman, because it was caught on video, it's in one of the show file archive, in the archive somewhere, make sure, they were taking pictures, and he said, make sure you get me with some of the devastation in the background. Well, that's the shot plan of any given news organization that goes to cover one of these things. And I guess the philosophical question I'm asking is, what about a giant killer tornado hitting Oklahoma is news? What about a giant killer tornado hitting Oklahoma is not dog bites man? What overarching social good is being advanced by sending Wolf Blitzer out to grope at some toddler's bare foot in a desperate attempt to appear something other than the 1% that he is? And again, I'm not trying to be an ass about this. I'd really like to have a legitimate discussion about what is being accomplished in that. And I go back to what I said a few weeks ago about having worked for CNN when this whole thing first flowered and bloomed in all of its corruption. Baby Jessica down the well in Midland, Texas. Okay, I'll start. A social good is advanced insofar as we can learn about the perils of building schools without storm shelters. The problem is, we can't tell that story without some right-winger, you know, remember, the ones that are dragging us to their fate, complaining that we're playing politics with human suffering. Okay, so that story's out. Okay, so maybe there's a story to be told about how the frequency and intensity of these storms are increasing at unthought of levels. But the for-profit media can't tell that story either, because some right-winger will complain that that story is only being told to advance their desire to impose a carbon tax. What value, then, in simply pointing a camera at people who are too hurt and too shocked to be able to do much else, to people who are suffused with horrible grief? Pointing a camera at them and saying, how do you feel? Now, somewhere in the old journalistic credo of who, what, when, where, why, how, and perhaps how much, I suppose there's room for how do you feel. But how do you feel is not the lead to the story. Unless your only purpose is to create a reason for people to tune in so that you can later run an ad for reverse mortgages or buy gold now or vacuum cleaners that pick up bowling balls or some new and improved soap. Anything that approaches an answer that I have Well, I think you've got a pretty good idea of what my answer is. The only reason we go and point cameras at traumatized human beings is to entice other people who are not at present traumatized to tune in, look at them, say, "There but for the grace of God go I," and hang around until the commercials. Because that's all I get out of it. I do not have to see. The shocking aftermath of a tornado. To feel a sense of connection to the common humanity that we share. Is the rest, and I'm not talking about us, you, me, we, the Horn Family Commune, but is the rest of the country so detached from reality that it can only be shocked into a sense of common cause? Are we so wrapped up in our little nuclearized worlds that we can only be shocked into caring? It's a long way from the hills and hollers of Appalachia to the broad, wide, flat, open spaces of Oklahoma. And there's a lot of history there. And a whole bunch of it not very good. But if I could manifest sympathy and empathy even for a white bearded man standing against a backdrop of rubble holding the body of his until recently alive little baby girl slaughtered in an American bombing run in Iraq, well, I can do it for folks in Oklahoma too. But I needed to see that photograph from Iraq because I was partially responsible for that, because I am an American. I, you, me, we, except only in tangential form, are not responsible for what the tornado did, except for the fact that we have not marched in our millions on the global headquarters of ExxonMobil, or camped out in front of the home of Jim Inhofe to the tune of about 100,000 people until he understood that we were quite in earnest about the harm that he was doing us, you know, dragging us to his fate. To that degree, yeah, there's some responsibility that attaches. Not necessarily culpability, but responsibility. But this country has a disaster porn problem. And we're right smack dab in the middle of it again. Philip writes in, "As I see the devastation in Oklahoma, several thoughts cross my mind. First, I remember being shocked when I moved to Texas and discovered that homes and buildings did not have cellars and basements. Second, one weather pundit said that the F5 hurricane is not evidence of climate change. After all, there were horrific storms in the 19th century. I absolutely agree with him. After all, three devastating storms hitting the same town in a 14-year span is just wild coincidence. Third, as a refugee from the People's Republic of Massachusetts, I understand that the bombing was Hashem's way of telling us gay marriage was just too much for him. But I had no idea gay marriage is also legal in Oklahoma. Fourth, I am so very glad that the recent horrific events, the Sikh bombing, Sandy Hook, Boston, and Oklahoma, fit so neatly between commercials in the 24-hour news cycle. Were I interviewed after a tragedy that affected me and asked by Wolf or Anderson how I felt about losing everything, I suspect my response would be censored because I'd answer, "Look, moron, how the fuck do you think I feel?" and flip him a giant bird. Isn't it time for Wolf to have his depends changed and return to home? The home? Lastly, I'm weary of the media praising Americans as Chris Hansen did for their remarkable and singular generosity when it is reactionary and not proactive. We can't pay taxes to address our problems up front, but when a disaster occurs because we've cut funding for the National Weather Service or disaster prevention or some other beneficial government program or service, the money pours in too little, too late, and always after people die. Be well, Philip. Yeah. So we will take a break. It's Tuesday, and being Tuesday, we have the Green News Report with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. It's about 18 minutes before the hour. Titanic Tuesday on the Horn, this 21st day of May, 2013. Over halfway through the program, nothing rolling in the way of support this evening. PayPal button's there, as is the conventional mail address if you choose to use it. Thank you very much if you do. Phones are open, 304-658-3333, Skype line, Bob Kincaid Horn on Skype. Either way is fine. This is Conversation Radio. This is the Horn.
Yeah. that waiting, hot on the blankets in the garden. But God said nothing, so someone has him beg your pardon. Not quite clear, not what you just spoke. Is that a parable or a very subtle joke?
It's Tuesday, May 21, 2013.
There is absolutely nothing left out here.
A Green News special report.
Everything within a square mile of this school has just been decimated by this storm.
Devastation in Oklahoma.
Get to shelter. Get to shelter right now.
Another record tornado hits Moore, Oklahoma.
Look at that school. Look at that school, guys. Oh, my God.
As the city wakes up to the day after.
On top of six children.
I was lying on top of them.
And they're all okay.
All mine are okay.
Questions about resilience.
Lost everything.
And the influence of climate change.
The climate has changed to make extremes more likely, it appears, with tornadoes.
All of that and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and yes, snarky comment.
There were a number of people along the East Coast shore who were unhappy about your vote on Hurricane Sandy. In fact, you said that the request for funding was a slush fund.
Well, let's look at that. That was totally different. That won't happen in Oklahoma.
You're quite a piece of work, Senator James Inhofe of Oklahoma. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, in the wake of this horrific storm, this horrific tragedy in Moore, Oklahoma this week, questions again about the relationship between climate change and tornadoes. We have a statement from Dr. Kevin Trenberth of the National Center for Atmospheric Research. We have that posted at bradblog.com. Essentially, he says that while we can't make a direct link between any particular storm, any particular tornado, and climate change, the fact that there are warmer and moister conditions, that makes more unstable air, that increases the probability of these storms, and therefore then the possibilities of these tornadoes. He says it's largely chance, but the odds are greatly increased thanks to global warming.
Yes, it's a very complicated and complex answer. We'll have some more thoughts on that in a moment. But first,
the people of Moore should know that their country will remain on the ground, there for them, beside them, as long as it takes.
That was President Obama on Tuesday morning after signing a disaster declaration freeing up federal funds for the victims of the tornado that devastated Moore, Oklahoma on Monday. The National Weather Service has designated Monday's tornado in Moore as an F5, the highest maximum rating over at least one area of the track. It's the same as the historic F5 tornado that hit Moore on May 3, 1999. Monday's tornado is one of the most destructive in U.S. history as well, since it hit a populated area. The confirmed death toll has been revised down to 24. That's including 9 children who sheltered at 2 elementary schools, according to local news anchors at KFOR-TV.
They were sheltering in the hallway, which was deemed their safe spot. There is no safe spot above ground for an F5.
Veteran reporter Lance West of KFOR broke down in tears when he saw the destroyed Plaza Towers Elementary School.
It is, I've never seen anything like this in my 18 years covering tornadoes here in Oklahoma City. This is, without question, the most horrific I've ever seen.
Okay, Lance. Oklahoma's senators, James Inhofe and Tom Coburn, say they will seek federal disaster aid, but that any additional emergency funding for this disaster relief must be paid for by cuts to other programs elsewhere in the federal budget. Both of those senators, both Republicans, voted against federal disaster aid for Hurricane Sandy.
And yet Senator Coburn, after being hit by critics, promised federal aid, quote, without delay. His office went on to criticize those who would critique him for playing politics with disaster aid, although I must say that seems exactly what he and Senator Inhofe and a bunch of other Republican senators did after Hurricane Sandy, with folks freezing and homeless in the middle of winter.
On Tuesday, Oklahoma's Republican Governor Mary Fallon said they will rebuild and regain their strength. But the question now turns to, will they rebuild smarter? This is the third tornado to directly hit Moore since 1999. While modern technology and improved forecasting have increased the advanced warning times for tornadoes, the repeat disasters in Moore raise questions of why Oklahoma state building codes have not substantially changed to give residents more protection in a region where most people can't afford to add storm shelters or community shelters. Most Oklahoma schools do not have shelters because of the cost. And, of course, a major question is the influence of climate change in the tornado disaster. The short answer is it's complicated, mostly because there's not enough data, and the data scientists do have is mixed. But we do know that we're seeing more extreme weather events, including greater swings in extremes. We had a record high number of tornadoes in 2011, followed by a record low number of tornadoes in 2012. In an interview with Peter Sinclair of ClimateCrocs.com, Weather Underground meteorologist Dr. Jeff Masters explains.
Some very extreme sorts of statistics we're looking at. The climate has changed to make extremes more likely, it appears, with tornadoes.
I don't know how you can come to any other conclusion, but I guess we'll just have to wait to see what Senator Inhofe from Oklahoma says. He has, of course, called man-made climate change the greatest hoax ever perpetrated on the American people. For more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. And remember, you can text the word Red Cross to 90999 to send $10 towards the relief effort in Moore, Oklahoma. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Yes, and how many deaths will it take till he knows that too many people have died? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Brock.
Yeah, 5 minutes before the hour. Hit a little early start on hour three, but that's fine. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid thank you very much. Let's begin that way this evening. Thank you very much to Tamara and to Philip. Tamara with a note right before we went to break. Well, Bob, it'll be my great pleasure to start off the fundraising tonight with my measly $10, and no, it's not, and thank you very much. Nothing measly about it. I'll be sending in my sending by mail, as usual. Tamara says, I logged on in time to hear Sandra. That was priceless. So poor. Jesus. I'd forgotten. I won't ever forget again. And then Philip kicking in as well. So thank you both very much. We're about a third of the way toward tonight's fundraising goal. Thank you very, very kindly. And there, you know, there we were. I consider Brad a pal. And yeah, here we are talking about. But I hope we're talking special report. Okay. But the fact of the matter is, at least they went out and found somebody with something newsworthy to say about it. We've all seen the footage with the audio accompaniment of, and he was a West Virginia fellow, by the way, the man who was watching the mooring of the Hindenburg, those cries of "Oh, the humanity!" That was news. But I guess I'm most concerned about the intersection of news and disaster porn. And maybe that's just because I'm a cynic. Let's go to the phones. See who we've got. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. It's Juanita from Columbus.
Well, hey, Juanita. How are you?
Doing fine. How are you, Bob?
I'm okay. I guess. I think.
Well, I called to talk about the media because it's my Achilles heel. I hate the media passionately. And I have always said that as progressives, two things we should stay focused on, and that is the media and the vote. If you recall, Howard Dean, remember when he made the infamous scream?
Oh, that wasn't one? Yes.
Well, do you remember what happened right before that? He was on the air with Chris Matthews. And Chris Matthews asked him what would he do about the media. And Howard Dean made the mistake of telling the truth. He said he would break these big companies up. And from that point on, Howard Dean was mud in the media. That's when the scream thing came out, and they hounded him and hounded him and hounded him. So, you know, I remember listening to the BBC. It used to come on. I don't know if it still does on a NPR here in Columbus. They used to come on at
BBC World Service.
Yeah. And I it was probably 10 years ago, Bob. And I remember this BBC journalist saying that everything that is wrong with America can be traced to its media. And I agree. I think a lot of things. You always speak so boldly and courageously on racism, but a lot of the, you know, our media is a great propagator. You know, these guys wouldn't have a voice if the media did not help it along. And especially with the Republican Party.
Well, can I ask you a question, Juanita?
Yeah.
Sure. Is it a matter of media, or is it a matter of the profitization of media? Now, once upon a time in this country, big cities would have two, three, sometimes four big dailies, newspapers.
Yeah.
We're talking about,
right.
Well, up into the advent of television, two or three or four big dailies. And each would have its own political philosophy or slant or axe to grind, and it did so, and everybody knew what it was.
Right.
For instance, for a city its size, it is kind of shocking that Charleston, West Virginia, still has two dailies, one being the Charleston Gazette and the other being the Charleston Daily Mail. And if you grew up around here, you know from the time that you're tiny that the Gazette is the more liberal, right, progressive newspaper, and the Daily Mail is a right-wing fish wrap.
Right.
In that era, you know, they all had their advertising from the department stores because everybody wanted you to come to their store, and all the car lots advertised with all the papers because you wanted everybody's business. Okay. But with the advent of television and with the advent of letting the profiteers take editorial control of the vehicles, that all changes, and ideology sneaks its way into the door. I mean, for instance, I used to ask the question in Beckley when I was on the air there: don't you want liberals? Don't businesses want liberals' money too? Because there are some, and they do have money, and they do spend it, and they buy cars and refrigerators and stoves and they go to, you know, and couches and tables, and don't you want them to do that too?
Well, you know, again, Bob, this is the failures of the left. There was a brief opening in 2006 when Nancy Pelosi actually said something about bringing back the Fairness Doctrine. And do you know who was against it? It wasn't just the right wing. At that time, Air America was on.
Well, let me be clear about something, Juanita. I'm opposed to bringing back the Fairness Doctrine.
Why? You don't think the Fairness Doctrine is... wasn't it better with the Fairness Doctrine?
The Fairness Doctrine is not nearly... The go-away of the Fairness Doctrine sort of opened up the gates for the likes of Limbaugh to rise up, but it is not nearly as pernicious in its operation as Bill Clinton's 1996 signature of the Telecommunications Act.
Of course.
But let me lay out my feeling about the Fairness Doctrine real quick. You're tuning into this program because you can count on the fact that, unlike even some allegedly progressive programs, you're not going to have to listen to some blithering idiot right-winger on this program, right?
Absolutely.
You would be less inclined to tune in if you ran the risk of having to hear, say, oh, I don't know, how about that guy the other day who said he wanted to shoot Hillary Clinton in her genitals?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, the Fairness Doctrine, theoretically, would operate in such a way, if they decided to extend it, for instance, to the Internet, to make sure that I had some wing nuts on here. Now, do you want that?
Of course. No, of course not. But... you know, I'm just kind of frustrated that we have seemed to have accepted this. You're right. We buy products. We pay cable fees and satellite fees, you know, for television and so on. And yet, you know, we are pretty much locked out of the market.
Well, we're locked out of the media market because of the Telecommunications Act, because that means that basically opened the door for six giant corporations to own in excess of 90% of the media in this country. Here's another example that folks can really get their heads around, Juanita.
Okay.
Run a speed test on your internet connection. Now, if, for instance, you've got a cable modem, you might have the download speed of 18 Mbps, which is huge for, you know, consumer internet in the United States. Look at your upload speed.
Oh, okay.
Your upload speed will probably be 1. Okay? And that is because, and John Fox and I were talking about this one night, and he pointed it out to me, and that's why I'm pointing it out to you. The reason that upload speeds are so reduced as compared to download speeds is because these big media companies that serve as ISPs want you to download stuff because they want you to see their stinking ads. But they don't want you uploading stuff because that means you're in competition with them for other people's clicks.
Yes.
You follow?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And so if you want upload speed, you have to pay. For instance, we would have to pay more than double what we pay for our internet here if I wanted to go from 1 meg up to 5 megs up. And even 5 megs up is pathetic. And the only way we can make this work is by sending a single stream up to the White Rose servers, which everybody can then hit.
Right.
So there's, you know, there's...
Yeah. I understand exactly what you're saying, but, I think we have to demand, some kind of change. I thought for sure when the scandal with Rupert Murdoch went down, I thought that...
No, but Rupert's part of the club. Even though he's the Montgomery Burns of media, he's still part of the media universe, and therefore the for-profit media will rally around him to protect him because he is a member of the tribe. He's a part of the herd.
I realize that they will protect him. However, I think it is an opportunity to demand some changes. I think it was Kevin that called in your show. It was always been a couple of months ago, and he mentioned that Murdoch had 600 more hacking charges against him in Great Britain. That was in March. And the fact that we allow Fox News on the air in America says something about us as Americans. It says something about us not doing our jobs as citizens. Now, he may have ruled the roost in Britain, but they did not have anything like Fox TV in Britain. Sky News was nothing like Fox. He was trying to. Had the scandal not stopped him, he was going to do to their FCC what he has done to ours. And it's just so happened, I think theirs is called Ofcom, Britain's FCC is called Ofcom. And he had Cameron was going to make those changes. And it just so happened the scandal broke. But no other country has allowed Murdoch to do what he does with Fox TV here in America. And
that's because this country's purpose has been established to make the country safe, not for democracy, but for capitalism.
Yeah.
It's really that simple. If you get a chance, go back and listen to Dr. Bill's program from both yesterday and today, and you will have a better handle on why America exists as it does than just about anybody else in this country.
Okay.
That didn't listen to Dr. Bill, for certain.
Well, I will certainly do that. I will certainly do that. And I have been laying low with the coverage on the tornado because I just didn't want to subject myself to, the usual media spin.
Well, I understand that. I didn't want to be co-opted.
Right.
If that's an appropriate word. I'm tired of participating in American disaster porn. My heart grieves, aches for the people who have gone through this because I've known people who went through this.
Yeah.
When I was a boy growing up in Alabama, about the safest place we had It was a brick house, but you'd have to go out the back door and into the under into the area under the house. It was just a single-story ranch. But if you crawled all the way to the front, the front stoop was hollowed out on the inside, and that was the safest place to be. And I and my parents have made that crawl.
Yes, well, you know, as you know, I was born in Beckley, and of course, I never. Beckley's pretty safe as far as tornadoes and things are concerned, but yeah, I'm aware that Alabama, you know, is tornado country. And Columbus, when we had a tornado came through here in the 70s. In Xenia, Ohio.
Oh, yes.
It was just a really, really... And I remember them saying then that the tornado belt had shifted. And that...
And it has. It's expanded.
I had no idea what that meant at the time.
Oh, they had a tornado in Wisconsin last year. They've had tornadoes in California.
Wow. Wow.
And that just does not happen.
Absolutely.
And then last night when I said that it was a North American phenomenon, I got a note from our buddy the Angry Architect in Australia who said, well, maybe it used to be, but sorry, Bob, not anymore, and linked me to stories of tornadoes touching down in Victoria, in the state of Victoria in Australia, and in Bologna, Italy.
Wow.
Now, it takes some... You know, tornadoes don't just happen. You know, they are not the finger of God.
Well, according to Inhofe and his book, of course, you mentioned it yesterday. You know, he said it was arrogance for people to blame man for the, you know, the global warming.
And of course, he's an idiot. But on the other hand, it is ignorance, Juanita, to live in a place that gets them and not deal with that reality. For instance, people who are very, very dear to me down in Alabama, Marion County, got their home, their community got wiped out by a tornado in the late 70s. And
wow.
You know what their response was? Their home was pretty much okay, but within a matter of days they started building on a storm shelter. Underground, ventilated, food and water in it. You check it out every so often, and you know they went down into the storm shelter several times. And farms out in the Midwest in the 1800s and early 1900s. Farms always had a root cellar or a storm cellar because they knew where they lived. But you have to look at these communities that rise up. I mean, if you look at them on Google Earth, they look like one of those things that's designed by that guy who did the set design for Alien. They're just creepy looking. And they're all the same, and they're all put on concrete slabs, and there's no way they're designed to withstand anything approaching the devastation of a tornado. And the question is, why aren't they? In San Francisco, where government, you know, California's government is somewhat responsive, they engineer for earthquakes because, well, earthquakes are prone to happen there. And so when the earth shakes, it's not quite as terrible as, say, when an earthquake strikes Istanbul, where everything just turns to dust.
Right. Right.
You know, these, and I guess the point that I'm trying to make, Juanita, is that it is not inevitable that a place look like Joplin or look like Moore, Oklahoma, or look like Tuscaloosa, Alabama, or Phil Campbell, Alabama, when the tornado comes.
Yes.
It is a function of ignorance and, yes, greed, because these developers who put up these tracts of homes do so. You know, they'll put in a lot of bells and whistles. I mean, you can have a smart house that'll turn your lights on for you the minute that you pull in the driveway. But Storm cellar? No. See, that takes extra land, and you can put another house on that land and make more money. And the well-being of the people of the community be damned, because you got to make money.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I have watched, I'm sure you, if you have cable, you're aware of HGTV.
Yes.
Which is nothing but a giant infomercial.
Sure.
And you're right. It's the bells and whistles. Some of the houses have everything, like indoor, outdoor swimming pools and all this kind of stuff, but you're right. And a lot of these newer houses just aren't built that well.
Because the goal is build them, get them up, get them sold, and get the next one built.
Yes.
And, there are real questions we can have, but remember, if we start asking these questions, the response from the right wing is going to be, look there, you're trying to be a job-killing government regulator.
Of course.
Well, but, I mean, shouldn't, if you live in Tornado Alley, shouldn't you have somewhere to go? I mean, did you hear the actuality from the teacher in the school saying there's no safe place when a tornado comes if you're above ground?
Right.
Now, why is a school built with public dollars in Oklahoma that does not have an underground shelter that will hold every child? I mean, you know, it could be, you know, in bad weather, it's the children's gym. But it's underground, mm-hmm. where a tornado can't kill the children. And it's Oklahoma, so it's not like you're going to be digging into water. You're not going to have trouble. You're not going to have trouble keeping the basement dry, for heaven's sakes.
Well, this is true, but we can't even have this discussion because the media, the way they cover these things, Bob, and as you called it, disaster porn, is they just constantly show you the same reel over and over and over, and the same people are brought on to talk about.
And Wolf Blitzer's just standing there time after time after time, groping at that little two-year-old's foot. Ooh,
and then you won't. And then it makes you so, you're so exhausted from it, and you don't want to ask questions. You know, and so I think maybe it's a tactic. I don't know.
Well, I was about to say, that's not an accident. I'm not trying to get all Alex Jones or anything, but that's not an accident. Show us, Don Henley said it so well in that one song. The bubble-headed bleach blonde comes on at 5. She can tell you about the plane crash with a gleam in her eye.
Yeah.
It's interesting when people die. Give us dirty laundry.
Yes, that's true.
You know, because the American people have to have their newspapers written at a fourth-grade level, or else they wind up chewing their toenails trying to figure out the big words, you know, the ones with more than two syllables.
Yes.
And that marks me as a real elitist. I'm sorry, but
no, it does not. No, it does not at all.
And so it's easier. For-profit media journalists, many of them are just lazy. And they've proven it because they're much more happy to be typing up press releases from the Heritage Foundation than they are getting out. And frankly, look, the days of the guy who learned his craft by starting out writing obituaries, and then he graduated up to covering the police blotter on Saturday nights, and eventually turned into a real worker in, you know, who a man or woman who works in words the way that Michelangelo worked in stone. Those days are gone.
Yes.
Because there's no structure to support them. And I can't speak to this with nearly the passion, the eloquence, or the authority that somebody like Dr. John can. Because he's seen it. It's real. You know, staffs are cut back. Investigative reporters, please. And so, you've got to support the blog. And as Dr. John told us the other night, you know, copy editing is a lost art where the internet is concerned. And the people who are running the show are the people who are out there trying to appease the shareholders with the next quarterly profit and loss statement.
Well, here in Columbus, we have one newspaper, and we call it the Columbus Disgrace, but it's
The Dispatch.
The Dispatch, and it is owned by right-wing family, John Wolfe, and they have ruled the roost as far as long as I've been in Columbus, and that's over 50 years. And they own I think a couple television stations. I've lost track because I don't get any.
And again, look what allows them to, look at what allows them to do that, Juanita. The Telecommunications Act of 1996.
Exactly.
Thanks, Bill.
And they can't give that paper away, Bob. They harass you and harass you about I get telemarketing calls all the time. They're in the stores with people set up to try to get you to subscribe to that paper.
And you know, the sad thing is, I come from a, you know, my personal family culture was one where the newspaper was cherished.
Yeah.
It was something that my mom and my dad, you know, the paper comes in, you take the rubber band off, you unroll it, and dad takes the sports section, mom takes the A section. A little bit later, they swap. And they say, hey, listen to this, and they read to each other, and I'm sitting there soaking it all in. My mother's fondest dream was to be a journalist, but she was a girl, and so the great uncle who was willing to pay for my uncle to go to college was not willing to pay for my mother, even though she had a Scripps and Howard journalism scholarship.
Mm-hmm.
And so she passed it on to me. Now, I don't know if she'd be happy with what I'm doing here, because what I'm doing is not journalism.
Well, I think it is.
It's not. But by the same token, I was raised in a household that not only appreciated but cherished it. And so when I see the state of it today, I grieve. For instance, you know, you talk about growing up in Beckley. Well, mm-hmm. The newspaper in Beckley is owned by an outfit that is in turn owned by the Teachers Retirement System of Alabama. And apparently even the teachers in Alabama are as right-wing as hell. Because the Beckley paper is just a right-wing birdcage liner. And
it's Raleigh's. What is that, Raleigh?
Well, there used to be two papers in Beckley, the Beckley Post Herald and the Beckley Register and Post Herald,
mm-hmm.
and and now it's just the Beckley Post Herald, I guess, or whatever.
Yeah.
The Register Herald.
My aunt finally stopped taking them after 100 years, you might as well say, but she's finally stopped taking the paper, and I have an aunt who lives, used to live in D.C., but she now lives in Maryland, and she stopped taking the Washington Post for that reason.
Well, the Washington Post has just become a disgrace.
Oh, yes, and I don't know if they're trying to compete with the Washington Times, the Washington Times is pretty much a failed paper. It's just being...
Well, that's the Mooney Times.
Of course, yes.
And I don't know if I think the Post is certainly sinking to the Times' level. I mean, that's like in Pittsburgh, you've got the Post Gazette, and then you've got the Richard Mellon Scaife outfit, the Pittsburgh Tribune Review.
Right.
And that's just a shrieking right wing rag.
And isn't the Boston Herald isn't that owned by Murdoch? There's the Boston Globe, and then there's the Boston Herald. Boston Herald used to be, I know it used to be owned by Murdoch. I don't know if it's
still
is or
it's
not.
It's some miserable right-wing rag. Yeah.
Well, Bob, can I say just one other thing? I don't want to take up your, but it's just for your audience and you, about guns. I was watching, that show since I've moved. I've been watching too much television, because normally I don't watch that much television, but the move was so traumatic, I felt like I had to have some form of escapism. But anyway, the show called Pickers?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, They had an episode where they found some of those lunch boxes. Now, you're about the age of my youngest brother, one of my younger brothers, and you would have had a metal lunchbox.
Absolutely. The Man from U.N.C.L.E. was my first one, and it was bought over here in Oak Hill.
Well, my brother's was Adam 12, and he still has it.
Wow.
Yeah. But do you know why they stopped, that I learned this on Pickers, why they stopped making the metal lunchboxes?
Because kids were getting hurt?
They were afraid children were using them as would use them as weapons. Apparently, some kid probably got clocked in the head with one.
I was one of those kids who did.
Oh, dear. But don't you find that strange that we would stop making lunchboxes to protect our children? But as far as gun safety is concerned...
Yeah, that is.
I thought that was so odd. You know, here you are, you've stopped making these lunchboxes because you're afraid of your children getting hurt, but yet you don't want to curtail gun laws to protect the same children, to protect your family. You know, so I just thought that was, I wanted to share that with you and your audience. And
Right. But meanwhile, we've got Keystone Arms who are out there marketing the cricket to 5-year-olds.
Well, by the way, one of the reasons
because
why
of
I
freedom.
Moved, the reason why I moved, I had lived in a townhouse for about 12 years, and I've always rented. I've never been married. I don't have children. So there's no need for me to buy a house. There's nobody to leave it to. But I lived, I had a neighbor on one side and a neighbor on the other side. And my one neighbor was the maintenance man for the complex I was renting from. And, I got the impression he had a problem. You know, he was kind of angry looking all the time. But one time my aunt from West Virginia came, and she's hard of hearing. So I went over there and told him on both sides to my neighbors, and I told them that if the television is up a little loud, it's because, you know, my aunt can't hear, and I don't want to disturb you, so let me know. And the dude had, like, a gun on his couch arm, Confederate flags on the wall. Confederate flags on the wall. And then he proceeds to tell me how many guns he has. And it was shocked, but I tried to play it off and told him goodbye and all that kind of stuff. And then I saw him come in the complex, and he had something like an assault rifle. I don't know. Though I'm from West Virginia, my grandparents had a shotgun in the house, and that's about the extent of what I know about guns. But I don't know. I've lived alone all my life, and I have never felt the need to have a gun. But he came into the complex with one of those assault-looking rifles, and I thought, I'm getting out of here.
Yeah, I think
I'm
so.
I'm getting out of here because, you know, he's getting ready to blow, and then he put the Confederate flag up in his truck, and I thought, well, hey, you know.
Yeah, they are more to be pitied than to be scorned, but more
right.
than either they are to be feared.
Yeah.
And I'm not one who goes around advocating fear. But listen, when I'm walking into Kroger's and I see a guy who's got a 44 Magnum hog leg strapped to his hip.
Oh yeah.
You know, I don't cower in fear or scream incoming or anything, but I make sure that I know where I am relative to that person at all times, because you never know when one of these lawful gun owners is going to stop being that and turn into a terrorist.
Right. And, you know, when you, I think you have a right to know. If, I mean, the only thing that separating me from my neighbor was just a wall, you know, and, you know, guns go off and things like that happen, you know. I had a school friend who was killed sitting in her apartment, you know. Bullet came through the wall. And, you know, I just don't want to live like that. I live in a house now. It's the first time I've lived in a house. And I have to admit, I'm a bit spooked. Maybe I'm getting more fearful as I get older. I don't know, but, it's kind of nice not having neighbors on both sides, at least hooked to someone. But, yeah. So you just never know. So,
no, you don't.
I'll let you go, Bob, and I'm, again, didn't mean to take up so much time.
Oh, don't apologize. It's a lovely conversation, Juanita. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Bob.
You have a good evening.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Calling from Columbus, that is Juanita, formerly of the fabulous fabulous Beckley. Let's keep it rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Yes, hello. Is that Edward?
This Edward, yes.
Hey, how are you, Edward?
You shocked me.
I did?
Yes, I was just looking out the window. And of course, it's been raining today, but it's nice now. I won't talk about Moore, Oklahoma, except to say that when I was in school there, one of my best friends was born and raised in Moore, and I used to go with him to visit his parents there. That was a long time ago. But what I called about was there was a lady that used to talk to you. She was from North Florida, and her name was Juanita.
Yes, that was that's the first Juanita.
Yeah, I've wondered what happened to her. I haven't heard her in a long time.
I suspect it has something to do with the fact that we lost our toll-free phone service.
Oh, okay.
That limited a lot of people's ability to reach out to the program.
Well, damn.
And we're working on getting it back, but we've just got to keep the wolves off the porch. We got to at least run them 100 yards into the woods, and then we can start working on the toll.
Yeah, well, I understand completely.
It's a complicated circumstance, but I miss Juanita terribly too. Well, from time to time, I see her son Charles on Facebook though. And
yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I knew she had a son that was not very well, and so anyway, I always listen to her and enjoyed hearing her. And that's all I had to say, so I will let you go, and I'm rather very down in the dumps about Oklahoma.
As we all are. And I guess the question, Edward, is there some way, and that's the question I've been trying to ask, if inartfully, is there something more that we can do besides recognize how awful this is? Is there a way to alleviate future suffering? And do we even live in a country anymore that's capable of contemplating that?
Well, considering where they are, I wouldn't live there.
Well, you're a Texan. That's Oklahoma. I mean,
I know, but actually, I'm from North Carolina.
I know.
But no, I would not build and live in Moore, Oklahoma. I just would not. It's flat as a pancake, and those storms come through there with a vengeance, and you can't stop the weather. So the best thing you can do is not go there and go someplace else. Then that's the only thing I can think of. Now, the government is doing real good, I think, in helping all the people there. But, honey, that does not bring back a little child that has been
No, it does
dead.
Not.
It does not. And I don't know what else to tell them. Just don't go someplace else. That's all I can think of.
Or when you build back, for the love of God, build a storm shelter. They're going to have to build that school back. When they build it back, build it with a big underground basement gymnasium where the children and the teachers can go and take shelter.
Yeah, well, see, the thing was, the ones after that tornado in 1999 had storm shelters, but they didn't build them into the ones prior to that because it cost too much money. So everything before 1999 didn't have the storm shelters, as I understand it.
And even afterward, not necessarily. Right.
Well, true.
I mean, you build a housing development. How can a contractor, a developer, build a housing development in good conscience and not include a storm shelter? If you're building a housing development in Moore, Oklahoma, or anywhere else in Oklahoma, how can you build a housing development and in good conscience fail to provide a storm shelter with it? Or build it with a basement, for God's sakes?
Well, see, here in Dallas, nobody has basements here. And, of course, we didn't have basements in North Carolina because if you went down too far, it would fill up with water because you were going below the sea level. But the reason they didn't do it is, what's that patter song from Cabaret that I sang
money.
Before? Money, 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 money.
Exactly.
That's what it is.
You know, if you build something that'll help people survive, well, that cuts into your profit margin on the front end. And then after all, if the house gets blown away and people survive, you're going to get to build the house again. So there's more money.
Well, see?
See, capitalism. It's great.
Yeah. Well, my partner and I have been talking about having a shelter erected in our backyard. Our house has been here since 1925. And we've been real lucky, I guess.
Well, that house may have been built to last.
Well, I think it was. And we can, in an emergency, crawl under the house, and it's a pier and beam house, so it's pretty sturdy. But I don't know whether it could stand an F4 or 5 tornado or not.
There's not much that can.
There is not much that can, let me tell you.
And if there's a lesson to be taken away out of all this, at least if we're into what the scientists say as opposed to the religious people, the lesson to the takeaway on this is that there are going to be more and more and more F4 and F5 tornadoes.
Absolutely, because there's the climate change, and I don't care what Pat Robertson or the rest of them say. They can blow it out of you know where.
Hear, hear.
Oh, me. Well, anyway, maybe I've done enough damage for one evening, Bob.
Edward, you have a wonderful evening, please.
Well, you do, too.
All right. Bye now.
Bye.
Edward calling from Dallas. Talking about building schools in tornado zones without adequate storm shelters. I mean, I was a child when the roof got blown off my elementary school by a tornado. It happened to be over a weekend. So there are no children there. But, you know, we had, in the elementary school where I grew up, we had fire drills, but we also had tornado drills. And in a fire drill, you go outside. In a tornado drill, you walk out into the hallway and hope for the best. It was similar to a duck and cover nuclear device drill. And we were close enough to the Redstone Arsenal, 72 miles east in Huntsville, Alabama, that things like civil defense drills were still being done. But, you know, everything reminds me of something else. One of my favorite novels in the English language happens to be an American work. It won the Pulitzer Prize. It's by Robert Penn Warren. It's All the King's Men. Two attempts have been made to make a film out of it, neither of them particularly impressive. The second one was good, if only John Goodman had been cast as the boss, it would have been better. But fairly early in the book, Robert Penn Warren describes the rise of his protagonist, sort of anti-hero, Willie Stark, the boss, very thinly, sort of based on Huey Long. And it describes, of course, Willie Stark's rise to political power. And it begins when Willie gets himself elected treasurer of Mason County in this fictional state that's pretty much Louisiana. And he gets himself in a heap of trouble because he's not willing to play ball with the good old boys who insist on choosing a contractor for the new elementary school who is a political crony. And they object to taking the low bid because the low bidder uses laborers who have the wrong skin color. It's a Southern story. So Willie objects and gets the pants beaten off of him in the election because the machine turns on him and is returned to public life. That's where the story picks up. They ran it over Willie and got the new schoolhouse built by J.H. Moore. J.H. Moore used the brick out of the kiln owned by the distant relative of Dolph Pillsbury. It was just another big box of a schoolhouse with a fire escape at each end. The fire escapes weren't the kind which looks like a silo and which has a corkscrew-shaped chute inside for the kiddies to slide down. They were iron stairs attached to the outside of the building. There wasn't any fire at the schoolhouse. There was just a fire drill. About 2 years after the place was built, it happened. There was a fire drill, and all the kids on the top floors started to use the fire escapes. The first kids to start down the fire escape at the west end were the little kids, and they couldn't get down the steps very fast. Right after them came a batch of big kids, 7th and 8th graders. Because the little kids held up the traffic, the fire escape and the iron platform at the top got packed with kids. Well, some of the brickwork gave, and the bolts and bars holding the contraption to the wall pulled loose, and the whole thing fell away, spraying kids in all directions. 3 kids were killed outright. They were the ones that hit the concrete walk. About a dozen were crippled up pretty seriously, and several of those never were much good afterward. It was a piece of luck for Willie. Willie didn't try to cash in on the luck. He didn't have to try. People got the point. Willie went to the triple funeral the town had for the kids who got killed and stood modestly in the background. But old Mr. Sandine, who was the father of one of the dead kids, saw him back in the crowd, and while the clods were still bouncing off the coffin lids, Mr. Sandine pushed back to him and grabbed him by the hand and lifted up one arm above his head and said loud, "O God, I am punished for accepting iniquity and voting against an honest man." It brought down the house. Some women began to cry. Then other people began to come up and grab Willie by the hand. Pretty soon there was scarcely a dry eye in the house. Willie's weren't dry either. It was Willie's luck. But the best luck always happens to people who don't need it. He had Mason County in the palm of his hand. And in the city his picture was in all the papers. But he didn't run for anything. Kept on working on his father's farm and studying his law books at night. The only thing he did about politics was to get out and make some speeches for a fellow who was running in the primary against the congressman who'd always been a pal of Pillsbury. Willie's speeches weren't any good, at least the one I heard wasn't any good, but they didn't have to be good. People didn't bother to listen to them. They just came to look at Willie and clap and then go vote against the Pillsbury man. Not so much a lesson in politics as it is a commentary on the nature of how things get done in this country. Not trying to be a bummer or anything, but we sit here and we talk about the idea of having a conversation about how schools built in areas where tornadoes are prone to target, since they're anthropomorphic now, should probably have underground shelters for children to go to so that they will not be killed by killer tornadoes. But just as is the case with firearms and children, this too is a conversation we cannot have. Now, we have conversations in this country about, for instance, what does Steve King say? Benghazi and the AP and the IRS. It's like Iran Contra and Watergate added together and times 10. We can have that conversation, but we can't have conversations about meaningful regulations that are meant to be a manifestation of the will of the people, geared toward keeping more little children from dying. You know, you might even want to build a shelter big enough that folks passing by who needed a place to go could go and shelter there. But this is not the country that can have that conversation. I don't think. Sheldon Whitehouse tried, and he's getting unmitigated hell from the right wing over it, for simply saying that he doesn't want to go along with the right wing when they drag us to their fate. And the media have a role to play in this. And they're not playing it. It's ever so much easier to point a camera at a field of rubble and say, "Look, behold, lo, yea, verily. Let's go find Wolf a toddler to grope." Because the other way, well, that's hard. It's about 11 minutes before the hour. Let's go back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob, thanks for being on tonight.
Oh, thank you, Mark.
You know, I just got off Facebook, and they show the first victim by name is a 9-year-old black girl. And I listened to the callers tonight, and we all called to connect to each other for the same reasons, for connection. And being a southern white male, Bob, you living in West Virginia, being actually a native north, a person from northern Alabama, you're familiar, and you've declared that tonight, obviously. Anybody that doesn't know our nation's geography would understand that Alabama has tornadoes. Being a Midwesterner, tornadoes are very frightening, and probably one of our most popular films obviously expresses the fear from which is The Wizard of Oz. But I would just recognize, if you listen to Juanita's story, and who she is as a person, what a bunch of courage she has to be a woman on her own her whole life. That's really a neat story. And then Edward, what he shared with us a couple weeks ago about his buddy in Minnesota. The courage of older Americans to share glimpses of the struggles that they've shared with futures that are unfolding in our very eyes today. And President Clinton, a Southern boy who stands with the state of Abraham Lincoln's Illinois in the support of people who love each other regardless of gender, are able to marry each other. That shows.
Yeah, he came to that slowly, but he finally found his way there, didn't he?
Yeah, and I think we can understand your adjective of slowly. But you know, I was sitting at a dealership today, getting my vehicle fixed in between projects, or not fixed, but there was a recall on an aspect of my vehicle, and an older guy in a lobby where I was sitting in a very brand new dealership. And I just talked about the, it's funny how contorted things can get with interpretations, but, any case, he was from Pennsylvania and talked about flooding. And I guess we all reflect on fears that come from all of our lives. And I hear in the compassion in your voice, tonight as a human being, I can hear it in the excitement in your voice. And really it expresses to me a person that cares very deeply, and as well as your earlier callers from Sandra to Juanita to Edward to all the folks that always call the show. Not always call, but I mean that do call. We are human beings that are connected out of compassion and caring. Not saying that folks, with somebody I just read on Facebook said that patriotism, I guess to some folks is a Chinese-made bumper sticker, but or a magnetic bumper sticker made in China. Nothing against China, but the connection, ironically, that I've been writing on there, Bob, is. It's important that we Americans continue to try to be, even though I would agree with all of your assessments, we need to be the leaders of the world, which we could be, like Europe doesn't struggle to be, but seems to kind of just be. We just have the louder mouthpiece if we were to use it and exercise it, but because of the indemnification and the power of the oil and coal lobbyists, the suppression of reality is blocked, maybe, which is why Juanita doesn't like to watch the news, or like, so with China putting one coal plant a month online, and they're probably, I don't know what megawatts they would be, but they can't be small with so many cities with so heavily populated. And I'm not pointing fingers at China trying to do what she can to bring electricity to her citizens. I'm not being anti-human. I understand that our modern American world is ahead in many regards, but if we don't, we can't ask any other nation if we don't lead by example, as my Marines would always say and most of the time try to do. So it's important that, again, at the heart of so many stories is the environment. And actually, you could even look at Libya. Who's been doing business with Muammar Gaddafi probably for the last 10 years for sure was none other than, as some southern folks would say, Halliburton, but Halliburton. And of course, that's Brown and Root or Kellogg Brown and Root. So, you know, and with their gas. So, but what do the Americans do? They put AFRICOM there in Africa now. And unfortunately, the first American commander is a black American, gets caught in some kind of scam, and if he took the fall because of that, that's sorry, that's your bad luck. And that's the neat thing about working for the American Armed Forces. It's about usually truth and honesty, and that's could be a little heavy handed with the UCMJ, but it is fair. It's kind of a neat system in a way, but in any case, you know, and of course. Muammar Gaddafi was a Pan-Africanist. He thought that it should be a nation or a continent with organized states like Canada or Mexico or the United States or Europe has been implemented to be. So, I don't know. It's I just wanted to express to your callers, and some of them being older Americans, how important it is, the work that they've done for the folks. You've paved the way for Americans, whether it's no matter what the issues have been, that you have really bared the burden of responsibility. And Bob and I and Sandra take that mantle and run forward with it.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you very much. You have a good evening.
All right, brother. Bye.
Bye. Mark calling from Florida. And we are fast running out of time. I had two notes, one from Dr. John and one from Chris in California, that I badly wanted to get into the program tonight. I'm going to see to it that they go to the front for tomorrow evening because I think they're both important. And they have nothing to do with the tornado, really. They are separate issues. Well, you could say that Chris's note sort of speaks to the tornado because, he's talking about destruction. Imagine for a moment, if you will, we're talking about our ability as modern human beings to try to prevent the horrors of a natural disaster such as what hit Moore, Oklahoma. If you take core samplings of what we call an Indian mound, remember, it's a pyramid, not a mound, you'll often find that some of them are 1,000 years old, others of them are 2,000 years old. They're made of earth. The houses are no longer there that surrounded the pyramid itself, because they were made of, in many instances, easily reconstructed materials. And in fact, some made, as far as we know, structurally or design-wise, more intelligently than we design now. There's much to be learned. Much to be learned from our past. But it has to exist in order to learn from it. And when we destroy it, we destroy the potential to learn from it. So that's the program for the evening. Thanks, everybody. Thanks. By the way, cataloging now the weird places that tornadoes show up in our rapidly changing climate and rapidly changing world. Brandon wrote in from Brooklyn to say, he said that 2 years ago we had a tornado in Brooklyn, New York, the first I've ever encountered in my 30 years here. That's too weird weather for the Northeast. Batten down. More's coming. Because it is. Like I said, thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen. First and foremost, you who contribute your time, your energy, and yes, your kind gifts and contributions to keep all of this going. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox in Australia for helping us keep all the technical stuff in order and me at some reasonable semblance of sanity. Thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org, preserving progressive radio on the Internet for in excess of 10 years and doing so without ever having sent a bill. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and acact.org. Go to acact.org and learn how you can be a part of the process of ending yet a different horror, this one in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Here comes Rick Smith on the horn.